podcast of CBS This Morning will begin after this short break.
This episode of CBS This Morning podcast is sponsored by BASF.
We all share this world, share the same hopes and dreams. You dream of a future that respects the environment. We work on electric car batteries that last longer. Create catalytic technologies that help make the air cleaner. And find ways of making cities use less energy. You keep wishing, we'll keep innovating. It's why we're optimistic about the future. BASF, we create chemistry.
I'm John Dickerson.
That's him. I'm Gail King.
And I'm Nora O'Donnell. And this is the CBS This Morning podcast.
I'm Rena Ninen, a CBS News anchor and correspondent. From the stock market to trade, there's been a lot of business news this summer. And joining me to break it all down, CBS News business analyst Jill Schlesinger. Welcome, Jill.
You know, what happened to boring old summer, dog days of August?
Huh? It's a roller coaster ride out there, isn't it?
Oh, yeah. But at least the stock market's higher.
Doing well. So since the Great Recession in 2009, the S&P has really been rising. We've seen the stock markets reach record highs this summer. The president even tweeted out recently the NASDAQ has gone above 8,000 for the first time in history. So talk to me a little bit about this. You know, what the stock market is currently experiencing is what insiders like yourself call the bull market. So this happens when the stock market grows at a continuous rate without a dip for 20%. I always wonder, when you talk bull market, what does it mean?
Yeah, I mean, it just means that it's not gone down by more than 20% from the recent high. And, you know, bull markets have life cycles. And it's not surprising that in the 10 years since the financial crisis that we have climbed back. It really is not surprising because that was such a devastating crisis that once everybody realized, okay, we are not going into a multi-year depression. This is a severe recession, but we're going to get back on our feet. Then there was confidence and we could see that people were willing to own stocks and put more money into the stock market. First 5 years, I think, pretty much expected. This year, in the last 2 years especially, the strength of this bull market seemed to gather more force. And by some measures, this is the longest bull market in history. You can quibble. It's either the longest or the second longest right now. And I think that the last couple of years has been really a result of the policies of the Trump administration that were very pro-corporation. Think about this. What is the stock market? It is not actually the economy. It is basically a conglomeration of companies and their ability to produce profits. So what we've seen is that companies have done a lot better in the last 10 years than individuals have. And they've made a ton of money, and they continue to make money. And the tax reform that we saw last year, the Tax Act, that went into effect this year, was just like a supercharged boost to company earnings. And put that together with a better economic environment, low unemployment, people are spending a little bit more money. You put that all together, companies keep making money. That's what drives stocks higher. Mm. And it doesn't mean that it's going to go on forever, but it doesn't appear to be stopping anytime soon.
What does it mean to the average investor when you say we're in a bull market?
It just means that stocks are rising. So a bull market is, again, a rising stock market. You can have a bull market in stocks. You can have a bull market in bonds. You can have a bull market in cryptocurrency. The thing that's really interesting to me as someone who used to be a financial advisor and a money manager is that this is usually the time when people feel really psyched about owning stocks. Mm. Of course, this is the time for anyone in the business that you start feeling panicky because you're saying, oh my God, it's been going on for so long. What could upend it? And I would suggest to any individual investor in your retirement account or if out of your retirement account, your kids' college funds, that this is a perfect time to look at your accounts and make sure that maybe things have gotten a little bit out of whack. Maybe it's time to take a look and say, hey, should I take some of the money that's been accumulating in the stock market and move it over to something a bit safer? Because, yes, the bull market's great, but it will end at some point. Mm-hmm. Nobody has repealed the ability for the economy to go into a recession, and no one has repealed bear markets. So,
can you tell when it's going to come to an end?
If I could tell that, I would not be working
here
anymore. No. So there are some clues. And one that you may have heard of is something that's very weird. It's called an inverted yield curve. Someone will read that and they'll say, oh, I think I'll turn the page and go to the sports section. So what that means is, generally speaking, if you look at the bond market and you look at borrowing money, if I borrow money for a longer period of time, a company does this, a government does this, normally I have to pay a higher interest rate. And so if you look at the yield, meaning the interest rate that's paid, and you look at 2-year, 5-year, 10-year, 30-year government bonds, it will usually slope upward. But at certain points in the economic cycle, the yield curve does something different. It inverts, meaning that rates are higher in the near term, the shorter term, and lower farther out. And what that usually tells you is that you're in an inflection point. So some market watchers are looking and saying, if the yield curve inverts, that's a clue that you're going to get a recession. And I would say this, who cares? Of course you're going to get a recession. And of course you're going to get a bear market.
Yeah.
And as a long-term investor, you don't have to worry about when exactly that happens.
You know, President Trump has taken a lot of credit for this current bull market. How much credit do presidents and their policies should they get?
This is an excellent question, Anthony and Rena.
Anthony produces our podcast, who's
how do you not genius. Have he should be on the mic. I mean,
we should have him weigh in.
Don't you think?
Absolutely.
Bring him in.
Absolutely.
So I would say that presidents take too much credit and get too much blame for the economy. There are certainly presidents who screw it up and make things worse.
Do you feel it immediately?
No, you don't. And there are certainly Federal Reserve officials who can make it worse. Again, you won't feel it immediately. But generally speaking, economic cycles are long and market cycles are long. So, yes, do I think that the Trump administration's policies, which are lowering regulations, which are, you know, slashing corporate taxes, that those are helpful for companies? Absolutely. But at the same time, you know, that may be a sugar high. It may be that we get a little bump, a better than expected 2017 and 2018, but we're going to get a bear market and we're going to get a recession. And if that happens to occur under the Trump administration, which I would say statistically is probably likely, then I don't blame him so much. You just come off of a huge, lengthy cycle. So I think that at the extremes, you can probably place blame and give credit, but generally speaking, the economy moves in big, huge waves.
Mm. I want to turn for a second and ask you about NAFTA. President Trump and his outgoing Mexican counterpart announced a sort of preliminary deal this week to replace NAFTA. It's something we know the president's campaigned on. You know, in reaction to the deal's outline, the Wall Street Journal editorial board had this to say, and I'm quoting here, on first inspection, this is a half a NAFTA that contains some improvements, but is notably worse in many ways. Whether it can pass Congress is far from certain. Your take, Jill.
I think that this is not a NAFTA replacement, as the president said it was. I think this is NAFTA 2.0. And I get the Wall Street Journal editorial board, because there are parts of this that are very antithetical to a free market approach to the economy. So, for example, part of this deal is to really try to bring automotive manufacturing back to the United States to help the domestic auto worker, not the companies themselves, by the way, because the auto worker is different necessarily from the company. And so one of the rules that is agreed to between Mexico and the United States is, hey, 75% of an automobile's value has to be manufactured in the United States or in Mexico. And additionally, at least 40% of the components that are made in cars have to be created by workers who are making, on average, $16 an hour. So if you're a free market person, you look at that and say, how dare you mandate what my wages should be? I, as a company, should allocate my resources to the cheapest possible place. why on earth should I be held to some government standard of what I should pay an employee besides the minimum wage? But anything beyond the minimum wage, that should be up to me, the employer. So if you're a strict free market economist, there are parts of this plan that just don't feel right. Now, that being said, there's an upside and downside to the deal. Part of the upside is that there may be more jobs created, or maybe more jobs will be retained in the United States. And the downside is that a senior administration official already acknowledged car prices could go up.
Which people would feel immediately.
Yeah. And now maybe it might go up a lot. So maybe your, you know, $24,000 car will cost $24,400. And if you're financing it for a five-year loan, you won't feel it so much. But the prices should go up based on this.
So where exactly does this leave Canada?
Poor Canada. Those poor loonies. They have all those hockey players. You know, the Canadian loony. It's the currency.
Oh.
That's what they call them, loonies. Anthony, you know that. Of course you knew that. Anyway, that's the nickname. The loonies. It's a Canadian dollar. So Canadian Foreign Minister Chrystia Freeland, who's fantastic, by the way. I've kind of been a fangirl of hers for a long time.
She's terrific.
She used to write
Super
for the Financial
smart.
Times.
Yep.
And so now she's a politician. It's amazing. She's back in D.C. as we speak. And, you know, this was a bilateral agreement between U.S. and Mexico. Canada had basically been out of these talks for the last 5 or 6 weeks. And Canada said there are too many issues that are really need to be ironed out between the U.S. and Mexico for us to be part of this. You guys fix your problems, then we'll come back in. Mm. So now they're coming back in. There were two things that Canada really was had a problem with from what the U.S. was asking. One was the Trump administration had said it wanted any NAFTA 2.0 or half NAFTA. They wanted any reform to include something called a sunset provision. So kind of like tax law where we say, hey, it's good for 10 years and then it goes away. The Trump administration wanted a NAFTA which would live for 5 years and then expire to be renegotiated. And U.S. businesses and Canada and Canadian businesses were like, that is insane.
It's not a whole lot of time.
Not enough time to plan. Why would I put a plant somewhere or do something? I can't make a five-year decision. Trump administration gave up on that. So the deal they signed with Mexico was a 16-year deal, which can be renewed every 6 years. So I think that Canada is going to be happy at that middle ground. The other point of contention, which is going to be interesting to see, because this is going to be a big one for Canada, the U.S. wants to water down some of the dispute resolutions for NAFTA, meaning that essentially the Trump administration has said, look, if we want to smack you on the knuckles because you're violating some trade agreement, we get to smack you on the knuckles. And Canada's like, no, you don't. And that's going to be a point of contention. Now, maybe the U.S. will back down from that. Maybe they'll say, yeah, we'll live with what we have. But this is not a replacement. It is a reform. It is definitely more of in favor of the U.S. than either of the Mexico or Canada. But on the other hand, there's $1 trillion in trade we're talking about. No one wants to see this thing go down the tubes. So we'll see what happens. Mm.
So we saw the market sort of soar after the announcement, mm-hmm. right? What's your advice to investors who, you know, as these trade negotiations with Canada, with China continue, what should you keep in mind when you're buying stock and looking at your portfolio?
Let's look at your retirement account right now, Rena.
And can I just tell you, I am embarrassed and ashamed to admit that I probably have not looked at it in years.
Okay. So here's the... thank you for saying that, because you are incredibly smart and brave to announce that in front of the world. Here is...
Foolish.
Millions of downloads a day, ladies and gentlemen. So the first bit of advice is that when the market is cratering, it's a very bad time to look at your portfolio because you're emotional and it's hard for you to say, oh my God, the last time I looked at this, there was $50,000 in this account and I'm looking at it now and there's $30,000 and I'm going to basically throw up and I never want to look at this again, and you push it aside. But when you look at your account now, you may be very pleasantly surprised. So the first thing we want to encourage people to do is, hey, look at it. Don't go crazy. You don't have to look at it every day. But if you haven't looked at it in more than 3 months, look at it. And the next thing you're going to say is, am I on my plan? You probably don't have a plan, but let's pretend you had a plan. Maybe your plan was, I'm going to have 70% of my money in stocks and 30% in bonds. That's your allocation. Mm-hmm. I'm a growth investor. And all of a sudden, since you haven't looked at this in a long time, the percentage of your money that's in the riskier stuff in the stocks is already, it's at 85% and only 15% in bonds. So this is the moment where you say, let me get everything back into balance, into my game plan. 70-30 or 60-40, or maybe you're retired and you're more balanced and it's 50-50. So be sure to rebalance that portfolio. And especially, please, if you work for a big company and your company matches your retirement contributions and your company stock, whether the stock is way up or way down, rebalance. Do not leave more than 5% of your company's stock sitting in your retirement account. Just don't do it.
Why?
Because the risk is so insane. You know, the original risk, we used to call this the Enron rule. For those of us who are old and remember when Enron went kaput, we had there were people who had Enron employees who had 80% of their retirement plans in Enron stock.
Wow.
Or maybe you work at CBS News and you have hundreds of thousands of dollars in CBS stock because you haven't moved it and you haven't looked at it. That's not to say you don't work for a great company, but bad things can happen to a company. And when bad things happen to a company, you do not want to be the person who said, oh, I forgot to look at it. And now it went from 60 to 40.
Wow. And so your rule is no more than 5% of your company stock
in your retirement account.
Retirement, right.
Yeah. I mean, you could go up to 10 if you had a lot of money. Mm-hmm. And so someone's going to say, well, what if you were at Apple? I know. What if you were at Apple?
How can Apple possibly have a bad day, right?
Exactly. I still would like to encourage people to be disciplined about how much money they keep in a single stock.
You were mentioning Apple. I want to ask you before we go about Elon Musk and Tesla. Just fascinating, the developments there. Elon Musk had sent out a few tweets which halted Tesla stock. He said he was going to take it private, ended up coming forward saying, we're not going to actually do it private. That funding probably didn't come through from Saudi Arabia we were talking about. So it's actually prompted an SEC investigation. What are you watching for Tesla? Is it over for Elon Musk? Is he crazy or is he a genius?
Probably both. As in the words of my dearly departed father, who was a trader for, you know, decades in his life, a stock and options trader. That guy's a cuckoo clock. He really is. He is silly to have tweeted like that. He is also a genius. That said, Tesla loses money on every car it makes and sells. That's what you need to know. That doesn't mean that the technology is not interesting and fascinating, but if you go back and look at the years since Tesla has gone public, every promise that Elon Musk has made about the number of cars we'll create, the number of cars we will sell, and profitability have not turned out to be the case. So if you are a Tesla investor, you are rolling the dice and you're hopeful that maybe he stumbles upon something, and maybe he will. For most people, you don't have to worry about it. Don't buy the stock. You're not going to buy the individual stock. And if you want to take a flyer with some money, you know, as I like to say, if you're really going to go crazy like that, you might as well go to Las Vegas or Atlantic City or your riverboat cruise and, you know, get a few free drinks, play your roulette or play your poker and have some fun.
Because getting up that way.
I think that he's quite, you know, he should know better after his career. This is the thing. He's not 20. So the fact is, he should know better. He should be an adult. And if he can't restrain himself in the same way that, you know, the folks running Uber couldn't control Travis, that, like, if you cannot control your CEO and you can't, and he can't or she can't rein herself in, then we need more active boards to say, this is someone who is insane. We are not putting our financial future in that guy's hands or gal's hands. Mm. So, you know, look, I have met many incredibly bright CEOs and really engaging. And, you know, this is somebody who's been incredibly successful in terms of what he has created. That does not mean that he has the temperament or maturity or skill to actually manage a mature company.
It's just incredible, though, his ideas, as off the handle as he can come and as unhinged as he can be sometimes, he does have these creative genius ideas.
Yeah, I think that we did a segment on him in 60 I'm pretty sure that we did that. I didn't, but it was done. And when you listen to what comes out of his mouth, it is engaging and interesting. And I should also point out there are some companies that lose money for a while and then make money. Look no further than Amazon, which for years lost money. And Jeff Bezos kind of said, like, stick with me. I got a plan. And people thought he was crazy. The one difference is that Bezos always struck me as somebody who was had a more mature approach to management. He did not seem to be one of these, hey, let's see what happens. And I would say the same thing for someone like Mark Zuckerberg, where I could say, genius, great, Facebook, interesting. This thing has gotten away from him, and he needs some help.
When you talk about what people refer to as the FANG stock, Facebook, Apple, Netflix, Google, what are you watching for in the tech world and in this area?
What I think is interesting is that as bull markets go on, they do tend to narrow. So, you know, a beautiful bull market is when every single sector is rising. And right now we are seeing that more. When it's narrow and it's really, you know, these four or let's call the FANG and we add in a couple of more stocks like a Microsoft Apple. If you throw them all in together, I think that what you see is that they were responsible for much of the technology sector and a big chunk of the S&P 500's gains. You want to see a broader participation. That's the sign of a healthy bull market. One that's kind of getting narrower and narrower and narrower, especially coming into an interest rate cycle where we're seeing rising interest rates, is one that's probably at risk. Again, you're a long-term investor. Do you really care? You don't care. If you don't need your money for more than 10 years, just pretend it's October 2007. The stock market's making new highs. You inherited $100,000. And at that moment, you called the Jill on Money radio show and you said, what should I do with my money? And I say, put it to work, because statistically, you're better off putting it to work all at once. True. Except then the market craters on you. You call me back a year later and say, you insane, crazy woman, I've lost all this money. And I say, don't touch it. Stick with your allocation. And you know what? 10 years later, you're in great shape. So if you can look to the long term, every time the market cycles move, whether it's up or down at either extreme, if you remind yourself, I am a long-term investor. I don't need this money for 10 years. And any money you need within the next year, make sure you got that in a bank account, in a money market account, in a CD, just safe money. But if you don't need this money and you can live with the allocation and you can live with the ups and the downs, that's the key to investor success, that and keeping your fees down. Mm-hmm. So don't fork your money over to a managed mutual fund when you could be buying an index, and don't pay somebody who's going to sell you stuff you don't need. Mm-hmm. And all those pieces are really very easy to parcel out. The most important thing to remember for most of us is we are our own worst enemies. Don't mess around with us.
I love it. Great financial advice. I always feel smarter after being in your presence, Jill. Jill Schlesinger, grateful you could join us.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening. You can watch the full CBS This Morning broadcast Monday through Saturday from 7 a.m. to 9 a.m. on your local CBS station.
Or you can stream it live on the CBS All Access app.